This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Mellanox brings up Switch Hitter.
And arm wrestling with x86.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for April 29th, 2011. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined once again by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael. We've been up a long time already. I had to get up in the middle of the night to watch the royal wedding.
Seriously? Okay.
Well, you know, the nice thing about this podcast is we arrive as commoners, but we leave as princesses.
Okay. Well, I think you better speak for yourself there. But good to know.
No, I have not been watching it. It's on a little in the middle of the night here, and also I don't care that much.
Okay. I'm with you there. We're all about HPC. We're not into the reality of it.
Yeah, I get asked opinions on enough things. I don't need to think about Kate Middleton's dress.
Exactly. Well, we did have some interesting news this week, especially on the interconnect side. We saw Mellanox made a nice announcement. They're getting into the FDR InfiniBand business in an interesting way. They announced their new Switch X chip, which actually supports both the new speed of InfiniBand plus 40 gigabit Ethernet. That was kind of interesting. They put it all on the same chip. They shrunk it down. They had enough room to put all the functionality onto one piece of silicon.
Best of both worlds, right, Michael?
Yeah, and it's perfect for them. They've been talking about Ethernet, and they've had Ethernet products for a while, and now that they've acquired Voltaire, and that's closed, they've got a whole set of switches for that. So this fits pretty closely into their strategy of being an interconnect company rather than just an InfiniBand company.
Well, you know, this is an important announcement here because it not only brings out the next generation speed technologies on two interconnect fronts, but more importantly, what we've been looking at in terms of interconnect adoption is that the InfiniBand only strategy was in danger of getting capped because it's going to bump into areas where Ethernet was just the preferred choice, and for various reasons, it was hard for InfiniBand to penetrate. This gives data centers, organizations that are Ethernet aligned, whether it's in HPC or high-performance business computing or even the non-HPC data center, maybe an easier path for adopting a higher speed switch using Ethernet when they want to be comfortable with it and getting a speed boost from InfiniBand when they want it.
Right, exactly. I mean, they've been pushing into the non-HPC space for a while, actually, and they've got some proof points out there. But this will make it easier, like you said. They'll have the same piece of hardware out there, so it's a pretty nice path for people who do want to, you know, play around with InfiniBand or have an application out there. They can switch much more easily. It'll be in the chip or the switch or the adapter or whatever, and it'll be more of a seamless switchover. I don't know how dynamic it has to be, but certainly there'll be the flexibility to do that.
Well, and they have to do this if they're going to continue to enjoy the growth that they've had in recent years. Even among the hard-bitten high-performance technical computing cloud, cluster interconnects are only about 50% InfiniBand, the other 50% various generations of Ethernet. And that Ethernet share, although it's oscillated up and down depending on when there's a new speed available, hasn't really eroded away that much. And it's going to take some kind of convergence for InfiniBand and for Mellanox to continue to grow.
Yeah, although I think at the high end, I think InfiniBand is actually eating away at that Ethernet dominance. I mean, right now, I think the latest top 500 list, there was basically a crossover. They were at 50-50, and I think people in general expect those top systems to move more towards InfiniBand than Ethernet with the proprietary stuff mixed in there, too. So they're doing well at the high end, but to your point, for the broad-based market, certainly, there's going to be more parity now that 40 gigabit Ethernet's out there. I mean, the new InfiniBand is 56 gigabytes per second, so that's almost on parity there. The latencies are still better on on InfiniBand. So for supercomputing, especially the latency sensitive applications, InfiniBand is still going to be the choice. But
You're right that InfiniBand does do a little better at the higher end, but you got to be careful doing too much market intelligence based on free research of the top 500 list, not least of which, because that's a vendor submission managed list, right? The vendors are trying to get their own systems on there, and it underrepresents organizations with more generic or channel-driven systems or things that they've put together themselves, unless you're a research site or just organizations that don't want the publicity.
Right.
We've got a lot of visibility to the HPC market that goes well beyond top 500. And this is the right move for Mellanox to continue its penetration.
Right. And they can also point to themselves as a vendor that understands the HPC business and understands high performance interconnects. Whereas, you know, we can look at the other vendors like Cisco or some of the others that don't focus on this market.
Right. Well, I mean, among the Ethernet space, it's almost nobody who treats HPC as a target market. I mean, you could point to Arista, certainly.
Right,
they're
certainly
in there.
Yep.
You maybe could have talked about Blade, but they've been acquired by IBM, and we haven't really talked to them since then. The other Ethernet companies are around. They participate in supercomputing, you know, the Force 10s and the right. Brocades, but it's hard to say with any certainty that HPC is a target market for them that they're designing products for or solutions for.
Yeah, I agree with that, right, except for Arista and then Blade to some extent, although like you said, they've been folded into IBM, so maybe less
right.
so now. Yeah,
right. I don't want to leave out Qlogic, of course. Qlogic is in there as a second InfiniBand silicon source and certainly
right.
does have their solutions for HPC, but this was more of a Mellanox story right now.
Right, on the Ethernet side, like you said, I think they do sort of stand alone as a Ethernet, high-performance Ethernet provider from sort of top to bottom. They've got the silicon now all the way up to the adapters and the switches, so they've sort of got this complete solution. So if you're an HPC user, you might look at somebody and say, okay, they understand our space. They've been working in it. If I need Ethernet instead of InfiniBand, maybe that's the vendor to go with.
Yeah, well, that's certainly Mellanox's strategy here, and so far it seems to be working for them. We should mention they did announce record quarterly revenues up 52% from previous year, which of course has to do with their acquisition of Voltaire, right? It would have been stunning if they didn't have record revenues post-acquisition, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, they did have that record revenue, but like you said, they've combined the two companies. They also took a little bit of a loss on a GAAP basis, also because due to the acquisition, they had some intangible
right, because
assets.
Of the acquisition. So it's a very nice announcement. We're going to have to see how the whole year works out for Mellanox from a revenue and profitability standpoint, but I like this announcement.
Yeah, it's very good. I think it'll be interesting to see those switches and adapters come out, and then people start plugging them into real systems, hopefully later in the year.
Now, we're talking about where things are going to go. You got a little bit, Michael, into a speculation piece, wondering about a potential future with AMD regarding x86 and ARM.
Right. There was a little bit of a rumor mill brewing about AMD maybe looking at ARM as a potential second architecture they'd like to support. I mean, AMD invited ARM to a fusion development forum in a couple months, and they're going to be talking about their technology, basically about OpenCL and heterogeneous computing, and you know, and the same thing that AMD likes to talk about. But it was sort of interesting because, in a sense, the ARM technology, the architecture, is sort of in competition with what AMD is doing with their fusion product. They basically have, you know, a CPU and GPU technology that they can integrate together. So it was a little interesting they invited them over. Now, it might just be a big kumbaya for heterogeneous computing and OpenCL, which both companies are big on. But it fueled some speculation in the media and with me, too, that maybe AMD is looking at ARM as maybe a future platform that they'd like to build on.
Well, we certainly know that ARM has been trying to sell to AMD. That's the business that they're in, licensing these architectures. And I think it was out of that EE Times started some of the speculation around whether AMD is interested or should be interested. But I don't know about that side with the rumor and they got invited to this conference or whatever. I don't know that there's a lot of basis for that kind of speculation that AMD is interested. We know ARM's trying to sell them. I just don't know if the interest is mutual.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's definitely in ARM's interest to get AMD on board. That would be a big licensing coup for them, certainly. But this invitation, this conference, and kind of cozying up to them, yeah, probably not. But I think it reminds everybody, you know, what would be the reasons AMD should go for ARM, and I think those reasons are really pretty compelling. I mean, AMD has been in the x86 world for 20 years, and, you know, they've made a business out of it, but they've also been, you know, it's been a struggle all along almost the whole time, and they've only got this 10 or 20% share of the market, which is big because it's a big market, but they could never really control their own fate, and getting into the ARM business would allow them to do that. It also would allow them to get into a set of markets that they've been kind of shut out of because they don't have a low-power x86 solution like at least Intel does. I mean, Intel has to struggle against ARM to do this with their Atom, but AMD could actually use ARM and actually join the crowd that's, you know, going into this big market for tablets and smartphones and these other mobile devices. So this could be an opportunity for AMD to actually get into, expand their market space at the same time, sort of get away from the codependency with Intel and that relationship, which has always seemed kind of problematic to me.
I mean, I get it, but to me, this sounds like sports fans dreaming about realignment or, you know, trading for all their favorite players, and it doesn't get into the practical issues of how that would actually happen. AMD is so entrenched in the x86 market. I think for them to look up and say, no, we're going to do ARM instead, you know, how would they do that? And maintain a product line and programming, and they got all their engineers that they'd have to change over. I just don't think it's practical.
Well, I don't think the idea is to drop x86. I think they can keep that business. I mean, we're talking really about expansion here. And I think everybody kind of speculated on this, is thinking that it would expand into this space and just keep both architectures going. Now, if one architecture sort of, you know, started dying, then there might be an actual migration. But for the short term, I think they could just pick up an ARM license and start making products and finding and sort of exploring these markets with them. And they can do this at a fairly, you know, reasonable rate. I mean, they don't have to – I mean, the architecture is done. It's not like they have to, you know, design the ISA or anything. They can just pick up a license and start designing chips, and they have all the expertise to sort of do that. They've got all the relationships on the business side to push out products. It's just a matter of, you know, paying a few million for a license, and then you have to pay royalties on those chips, which they haven't done in the past. But it's a fairly low barrier to entry. And I would think, you know, they might start small and just see, you know, maybe make one or two chips for markets that they have no footprint in now and see how it goes and then go from there. They don't have to drop x86.
I don't know. I still think it's more complicated as, oh, you just have to license an architecture and pay some royalties. I think it's pretty substantially more complicated than that, Michael.
Well, yeah, you've got to hire engineers to make these products and design the chips, but it's not like it's effortless, but compared to, you know, other
ways.
It'd
be a pretty big bet that they'd have to make. It'd be a pretty big bet, and you got to worry about whether you're sending the message that you're not confident in your x86 processors. Furthermore, I don't think that from a technology standpoint you can make the argument that they've always been second fiddle to Intel, and there have been points in time in all different markets, including HPC, when they've been ahead of Intel on the technology curve, and it's not clear to me that their problem is they can't catch up to Intel from a technology perspective. You know, Intel's got a lot of advantages in a lot of different areas, and I don't know that ARM closes all those gaps.
No, not on the x86 playing field, but in other areas, I think they could. Like, they would have a more interesting product to go up against Atom, certainly, which they really don't have now. And also, you know, doing what NVIDIA is doing. I mean, AMD's already doing their Fusion product with x86 and the ATI intellectual property, but they could also use ARM as the CPU for a Fusion, or they could use the Mali graphics for the other side of it. They'd have a lot more options. I mean, it gives them a lot of flexibility on how to sort of mix and match some of these technologies. But like you said, it's definitely a technology investment, so it's not like it comes for free, but it gives them more flexibility, and I think more importantly, it would get them out of that dependency on the x86 market and technology.
Yeah, to me, this only makes sense if you're prepared to make the bet that ARM is going to start beating x86 in a lot of markets where x86 is currently winning. And I'm not sure that that's a signal that AMD wants to send.
Yeah, well, I mean, that could be a potential problem. But it's not like AMD has never done this. I mean, they bought ATI with the idea that they wanted to move away from strictly an x86 platform.
And yeah. You know, how's that working out for them so far?
Well, right now, it took a while, but the Fusion chips, you know, they're starting to get some traction. I think in the long run, that technology and that strategy will work out. It was an expensive thing to do, obviously, because ATI was
expensive. And it's taken them a long time to get their story together on it. I mean, they bought ATI, and that was about the last we heard from ATI for about 18 months.
Right, but those products, the discrete products, are selling well. They're competitive, and the Fusion products are some of the most interesting products out there right now. They're basically the only true CPU-GPU Fusion products that we've got, or heterogeneous products we've got.
And as a result, they've captured 90% of the market, right?
Well, of their market, maybe so. But yeah, I mean, I think these are going to be interesting chips. They've gotten some traction, and this is just the beginning.
Well, this is the point I'm trying to make, Michael, is that, you know, they got ATI, and they put out eventually something that's a really compelling product in a lot of different ways, and it still hasn't led directly to a whole lot of market share so far. It might in the future, but to do something like this with ARM would be a very speculative bid that does carry a lot of costs. So, you know, I'm back to my water cooler comment of, you know, there's a lot of speculation around, wouldn't it be interesting if, but I don't think it's a practical consideration right now.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, we don't know the minds of AMD, certainly. I can't imagine they're at least not considering something like this. If I were there, I would at least be considering that. And I don't know about the practicalities of the business. Certainly, it is an investment. It's not as big an investment as buying ATI, certainly. That was a huge acquisition. It would be a much smaller entryway into this market, but yeah, it would be a huge decision. And like you brought up, there are some downsides to it. But I tell you, I wouldn't be surprised if they did this. But you know, AMD's going through a lot of changes now. You know, they've mixed their execs around, so who knows what they're really thinking now? It's just
an excellent point. The new execs in the executive office—you never know which way it's going to go.
But I will say this, I'm bringing that up. I mean, they basically kicked out Derek Myers because he, or at least the speculation was, he wasn't very tuned into the mobile market. They didn't move quickly enough to get that. And I think the thinking was, at least from maybe the board, is, you know, we need to be in those markets. And this is one way to get to those markets, at least. So
you're doing a lot of speculation this week, Michael. I like it.
Okay. Well, I'm taking over your job, I guess. So I can't
No, not at all. You do a very good job of it. Let's talk quickly about something that's not speculation, but it's related to the AMD stuff, which is NVIDIA has announced some changes to the GPU technology conference.
Right, their GTC conference, which they've been putting on each fall for the past few years, they're actually going to kind of switch that around. They're actually going to expand it deeply into Asia and have a bunch of local conferences there and move the fall conference to the spring, not this spring, but next spring. They're going to fold what would have been this year's GTC conference into the what they're going to be doing at supercomputing this year, which is just over the hill in November. But yeah, they're going to expand it pretty substantially because they're going to have all these local GTC conferences. There's going to be one in Singapore, Taipei, Tel Aviv, all in May of this year, and then one in Tokyo in July, and then one in Beijing towards the end of the year in December.
They have five different Asian cities that they've picked without picking one in Europe is kind of interesting.
Right. I mean, they didn't mention Europe. Now, of course, there's ISC coming up.
I'm counting Tel Aviv in the Middle East as part of Asia. It's certainly not Europe.
It's certainly, yeah, I have the Tel Aviv one out there. But Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing the rationale there is that there's ISC, which is in the middle of the year, which is also a big GPU focus for GPU computing, and they can do that section there. But yeah, I guess it's mainly, I mean, it's almost exclusively, except for Tel Aviv, into Asia, and have these local ones. And certainly people, you know, have been talking a lot about the Chinese HPC and supercomputing, so the Beijing one should be especially interesting to see what the local community is doing there. Of course, at the higher level, China's been very aggressive about adopting GPU technology, so there might be a lot going on even beneath the top 10 and top 100 systems.
Well, you know, indisputably, GTC has grown into quite an event in a very short amount of time. And this seems to be, to me, that they can get more sponsors and they think they can get more attendees by doing this kind of multinational sort of approach. An interesting thing to me was that as part of this announcement, they threw out casually that GTC was the world's second largest supercomputing show. And I had to stop and think about, you know, what do I think about that for a minute? What do you think of that claim, Michael? Second largest supercomputing show.
I'm not sure if that's completely accurate. I mean, I remember thinking when I went to the event last year that this is sort of like a supercomputing show without the CPUs, and it was big, certainly. It wasn't as big as the SC conference, but it did remind me.
Well, that's number one, and then they're saying this is number two. I went and looked, and, you know, they did have a handful more people at GTC than they did at ISC. Of course, I think, you know, probably 80% of them were NVIDIA employees, but that's an exaggeration, obviously. Yeah. They did have 2,000 plus people at GTC.
Yeah, there were a lot of developers there. And to be fair, it's probably not all to be considered HPC there. There was a lot of people that were doing just straight visual computing, right, and other sorts of lower-level GPU, client-side GPU computing that people might not associate with HPC strictly. Most of it was technical computing, but not necessarily at the HPC level. But certainly it did definitely remind me of a supercomputing conference. I think in that sense, I think it was sort of the right move to sort of combine those two, since they were so close together, and then put one on in the spring in the U.S. to sort of make another place for the GPU lovers to focus, and where there weren't a lot of other conferences around. So,
yeah, I still think of GTC as being more like an Intel Developer Forum kind of event. It's, you know, it's put on by a single vendor that excludes their direct competitors. It addresses a subset of the supercomputing market and also gets into other areas beyond supercomputing. I don't think of GTC in the same category I think of ISC right now, but it is a growing and important event.
No, you're right. I mean, it is a vendor conference, but even going there last year, there were a lot of people talking about the ATI technology and FPGAs and even Intel technology. I mean, it was, you know, there were a lot of developers and users there, so they really couldn't, you know, just control all of that. But it is a vendor conference. They're controlling all that. But right now, since there's only two GPU players and really only one that's really pushing extremely hard on GPU computing, it is sort of a focus for GPU computing in that sense. It is sort of a general purpose conference, but yeah, and we have to remember that, you know, they are a vendor and they've got all their interests there.
Well, and you know, GPUs have been coming up. I mean, the NVIDIA announced their $100 million in Tesla revenue for their last year, and we're seeing it show up a lot in our site census with more people trying it. So it's an important technology. We're certainly going to continue to track it. We'll attend GTC from our side regardless of what month it's in. I don't know if we're going to go to five different cities in Asia in order to do it, but we'll cover it.
Yeah, and certainly we'll be covering it too with a lot of interest there. And we're just talking about AMD. I mean, they're actually coming into this space in the Fusion side, so it's not like we can ignore them. It's just they've got a different strategy, and it's not quite as HPC focused, but it's as an interesting story. So it'll be interesting to see what happens at ISC and then at SC this year with those two companies and what their GPU story is about, because they do have different approaches. So AMD, I think some people are starting to count them out, but I think the Fusion products will eventually be an interesting solution for HPC.
Yeah, well, I think it already is an interesting solution for HPC. It's just a question of penetration. So that's something that that we'll continue to look for in our surveys as well.
All right. Well, I think that'll wrap it up for this week. That was a good discussion. And hopefully next week we'll have some new news to talk about and start it all over again.
All right. Thanks a lot, Michael. We'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.